By late 2004, the main wave of card use for debt consolidation and consumption had crested, but only after reshaping the U.S. credit landscape. Between 1990 and 2003, the number of people holding credit cards jumped by 75%, from 82 million to 144 million. But the amount actually charged exploded by 350%, up from $338 billion to $1.5 trillion. By 2004, public attention was recentering on real estate, the prime lever of the Federal Reserve strategy for rebuilding the assets base of middle, upper middle, and upper bracket Americans. Between 2000 and 2004, as we have seen, mortgage debt in the United States rose from $4.4 trillion to $7.5 trillion. Surging home values shared the limelight with bargain refinancing. The caveat was that although mortgage debt in the United States increased 66% between 2000 and 2004, Americans heeding the government's call to refinance at low rates usually spent the proceeds on consumer goods, not savings or home improvements. Thus, although the value of household real estate climbed 40% between the end of 2000 and the middle of 2004, collectively, owners wound up having lower percentages of equity in their own homes. Adding to the uncertain prospects for stability, an increasing percentage of homeowners chose to take out interest-only loans or adjustable-rate mortgage variations, contracts that essentially bet on several more years of fast-rising prices. In states such as California, where interest-only loans represented some 60% of all those taken out in 2005, one-third of homebuyers admitted to making an investment rather than selecting a long-term residence. Even in the United States as a whole, 23% of home sales were to investors. Alan Greenspan, who had promoted the refinancing mentality, expressed concern in late spring 2005 about the dramatic increase in the prevalence of interest-only loans, as well as the introduction of other relatively exotic forms of adjustable-rate mortgages. Indeed, these came in literally hundreds of packages and flavors. He added that the apparent froth in housing markets may have spilled over into mortgage markets, a reference to loose lending practices. The Federal Reserve Chairman's apprehensions prompted reassurances from mortgage bankers that the secondary market in mortgages assured wide dispersal of risk. But those concerned by the bubble were not convinced, and the Washington Post noted another worry. Many of the frothiest housing markets were in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Boston, New York City, and Washington, cities that were also major financial centers. One kind of speculation was helping to breed another. Total household debt, which includes both consumer debt and mortgage debt, jumped from $6.5 trillion in 2000 to $10.2 trillion in 2004. This leap reflected the government's emphasis on stimulating private debt, and the sum exceeded most national debt calculations. Precious few economists spoke of the actual national debt as anything resembling a bubble. The possible home price bubble, by contrast, preoccupied cocktail conversation from Long Island to San Diego. Although the stock market crash between 2000 and 2002 had been contained, international historical research, as we have seen, suggested that a housing debacle involving even half the 2000 to 2002 wealth decline in stocks could produce a greater fallout in the overall economy. 40% of the new jobs created in the private sector between 2001 and 2005 were housing-related. In ordinary times, the idea of bankrupt Americans becoming indentured to credit card operators could be taken as overwrought political propaganda. However, the fallout from a 10 to 20% national housing price slump could make the analogy somewhat more credible. Bankruptcies or shattered credit might well put millions of cardholders in thrall to dozens of issuers and mortgage lenders. And if Household America slowed its consumption, thereby ceasing to play locomotive to the world, the domestic and global effects could be incendiary.